Cord and I passed through the cupola, moving slowly so that she could take in the carvings and the mechanism. Then we were on our way up. I let her go ahead of me so that she could get an unobstructed view and so that I could steady her if she got dizzy. For we were high above the ground here, climbing over the curve of a stone buttress that seemed about as thick as a bird's bone when you looked at it from the ground. She gripped the iron banisters with both hands and took it slowly and seemed to enjoy it. Then we passed through an embrasure, sort of a deep, complicated Mathic archway, built into the corner of the presidium at about the level of the belfries. From here, there was only one way up, a series of stairs that spiraled up the inside of the presidium just inside its tracery walls. Few tourists were game for that much climbing, and many of the avowed were extramuros, so we had the whole presidium to ourselves. I let her enjoy the view down to the chancel floor. The courts of the wardens immediately below us were cloister-shaped, which is to say that each had a big square hole in the middle where the presidium shot through it, lined with a walkway with sight lines down to the chancel and up to the Starhenge. Cord traced the bell ropes up from the balcony and satisfied herself that they were in fact connected to a carillon. But from here it was obvious that other things, too, were connected to the bells. Shafts and chains leading down from the chronochasm, where automatic mechanisms chimed the hours. It was inevitable that she'd want to see this. Up we went, trudging around like a couple of ants spiraling up a well shaft, pausing now and then to catch our breaths and to give Cord leisure to inspect the clockwork and to figure out how the stones had been fitted together. This part of the building was much simpler because there was no need to contend with vaults and buttresses, so the architects had really gotten out of hand with the tracery. The walls were a fractal foam of hand-carved interlocking stone. She was fascinated. I couldn't stand to look at it. The amount of time I had spent as a fid cleaning bird droppings off of this stone and the clockworks inside.
"So you can't come up here except during Appert?"
she asserted at one point.
"What makes you think that?"
"Well, you're not allowed to have contact with people outside your math, right? But if you and the one-offs and the hundreders and thousanders could all use this stairway anytime you wanted, you'd be bumping into each other."
"Look at how the stairway is designed," I said. "There's almost no part of it that we can't see, so we just keep our distance from each other."
"What if it's dark? Or what if you go to the top and bump into someone at the Starhenge?
Remember that portcullis we went through?
On top of the tower?"
"Yeah. Well, remember, there's three more towers. Each one has a similar portcullis."
"One for each of the maths?"
"Exactly. During the hours of darkness, all but one of them is closed by the Master of the Keys. That's a hierarch, a deputy of the Warden Regulant. So on one night, the tenors might have sole access to the stair and the Starhenge. Next night it might be the hundreders, and so on."
When we reached the altitude where the sentry weight was poised on its rail, we paused for a minute so that Cord could look at it. We also looked out through the tracery of the south wall to the machine hall where she worked. I retraced my morning's walk and picked out the house of Jesri's family on the hill. Cord was still looking for flaws in our discipline.
"These wardens and so on."
"Hierarchs," I said.
"They communicate with all of the maths, I guess.
And also with the Eda and the secular world and other consents.
So, when you talk to one of them..."
"Well, look," I said. "One of the misconceptions people have is that the maths are supposed to be hermetically sealed. But that was never the idea. The kinds of cases you are asking about are handled by disciplined conduct. We keep our distance from those not of our math. We are silent and hooded when necessary to avoid leakage of information. If we absolutely must communicate with someone in another math, we do it through the hierarchs. And they have all sorts of special training so that they can talk to, say, a thousander, in a way that won't allow any secular information to pass into his mind. That's why hierarchs have those outfits, those hairstyles. Those literally have not changed in 3,700 years. They speak only in a very conservative, ancient version of Orth. And we also have ways to communicate without speech. So, for example, if Ra Orlo wishes to observe a particular star 5 nights in a row, he'll explain his plan to the primate, and if it seems reasonable,
The primate will direct the master of the keys to keep our portcullis open those nights but leave all the others closed. All of them are visible from the maths, so the millenarian cosmographers can look down and see how it is and know that they won't be using the Stonehenge tonight. And we can also use the labyrinths between the maths for certain kinds of communication, such as passing objects or people back and forth. But there's nothing we can do to prevent aircraft from flying over or loud music from being heard over the walls. In an earlier age, skyscrapers looked down on us for 2 centuries.